The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 350 of the Battery Power Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday, May 22nd, and I am joined, as often, by Eric Cole. Hello, sir. How are you on this fine Sunday evening?
I am doing okay, which is a pretty apt sort of way to be, considering how this week went. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
That sounds about right. I'm hanging in there. We're getting close to Memorial Day, which is, of course, the unofficial time where you can start checking the standings, although we've kind of been doing that already on the show. And as I sort of noticed when I was preparing the podcast today, the Braves have now completed a quarter of their season. Obviously, it's not exactly a quarter. That would be 60 and a half games, but they've played, 40 and a half games, but they've played 41 games. So they're now past the first quarter of the campaign, and I think no one would be thrilled with the way it's gone. They are, of course, 19 and 22 right now. They are on a 75 win pace, which is not what anyone drew up for this season, particularly coming off the World Series and the high expectations as they were. We'll get into it a little bit more later on, of course, but they are 8 games behind the New York Mets, and granted, it's the Mets, so anything is possible there. But still, when you play a quarter of your schedule and you are in an 8-game hole, that's kind of ominous. And speaking to what you just sort of alluded to, a 3-3 week this week is not a disaster by any means. Sometimes you have to win 3 out of 6 games, and it's kind of a natural thing in baseball. But to lose all 3 games by exactly 1 run, and in at least 2 of the 3 kind of maddening fashion, it was one of those weeks that kind of feel like they've all run together this season. Not a whole lot to be excited about.
Yeah, it's just frustrating because on the one hand, you have this team that, like, in some ways can't seem to get out of its own way, has certainly been unlucky in a lot of ways, and it seems like it always lines up where if they can get unlucky, they get punished in the worst possible way, and when they really need to get lucky, then they just can't, and, you know, when they get – they've gotten good pitching and not been able to get anything done, and then finally when the offense shows up, you know, they give up 3 leads in the same game and end up losing an extra inning. So it's a frustrating situation to be in for sure. And it's particularly frustrating, not only because the Mets have been performing well. I still expect that team has been a bit lucky offensively. And with both, you know, DeGrom and now Scherzer on the shelf, like, I expect them to come back to earth a little bit. But, you know, they're playing much better than they had been previously. And more importantly, you know, even if they're only a little bit better than Braves the rest of the way, or, you know, they end up winning the division, a wild card spot is far from a certainty right now because of the way teams like, you know, the Padres and others are playing, and the records they've put together, that it's not going to be easy to get one of those wild card spots. So any deficit that you're in right now, it's not like you're in a division playing reasonably well against a team that's just playing like the month and a half of their lives. Right. It's like you're not playing well either again, versus the rest of the league. And that means that right now the Braves are not playing like a playoff team, and they're not getting lucky enough to kind of keep themselves in that conversation right now. I mean, I think they're 3 or 4 games back of a wild card spot, and that's pretty rough a quarter of the way in.
Yeah, and if you want to be optimistic, which we're not, I'm not always, you could say the Braves are 8-7 in their last 15 games. So they've been a little bit better. They've been more like a team that's sort of playoff caliber in the last, you know, half.
Decidedly of medium.
Yeah, I mean, that's better than it was early, but still nothing exciting. And yeah, as of this moment exactly, they are 3.5 games out of the second wildcard spot. Again, not where you want to be. And also that's, I believe they're behind five teams for that. Granted, they're all kind of tight together, but they've been outscored. It's not like they've been super unlucky in run differential. They have a negative differential for the season. And as I plan on talking about this a little bit at the end of the podcast, the offense has been not what you want this year, Eric. And we'll come back to that in specifics, but that is the real glaring thing for me right now is that the pitching has been on the whole, totally fine or better. It's that this offense, which was supposed to be loaded top, you know, two or three team in the National League in terms of quality, has been decidedly worse than that so far through. It's only quote unquote 4-1 games, but even individual for individual, there really isn't a whole lot to be excited about. Even the guys who have been better than average this year, like your Matt Olsons and your Austin Rileys, have probably been worse than expected for those players. And that's when you have to get into it. Basically, the only guys on the roster that are full-time players that have performed at or above their baseline so far is Ronald Acuna in a small sample size, but it's Ronald Acuna who's an absolute monster, and Travis d'Arnaud, and that's kind of it. I mean, you could throw in guys like Bill Contreras in a small role.
I was about to say, I won't have Bill Contreras. Well,
that's why I said full time. Like, he's not really had full time plate appearances. He's obviously playing out of his mind right now, but the guys who have been in there every day for the most part of the season, even the guys who are performing, you know, adequately are kind of below their normal baseline. So that kind of explains it player for player, which we'll get into later. But I always wanted to acknowledge that at the top of the podcast. Look, like, nobody's thrilled, and it was another 3-3 week, and we'll dive into it now in terms of what actually transpired. Briefly, there really wasn't a lot of news at all this week. The only bit of actual news that was baseball related was Tyler Matzek going to the IL, and that happened on Monday, 6 days ago. You know, obviously he had not pitched well this year. The hope would be that he gets right in the near future, but that is a loss, but also not terribly unexpected, because I kind of thought he might be hurt on some level because the way he was pitching. Do you have any reaction beyond that other than just like, let's hope he gets back and gets right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm never going to slander Matzek. You know, I don't care if he has a 12 ERA ever. but it was kind of an interesting way the Braves were handling him. They kept trying to find ways to put him in positions to be successful where they were relatively safe, you know, where they're up by a few runs. And just no matter what position he was in, he just wasn't getting guys out. His velo was down, you know, fairly significantly over last year. Clearly was just getting squared up and guys were getting good looks at him. It wasn't good. And it was interesting, the reporting coming out that what he thought is that his shoulder started giving him some issues because he had altered his mechanics because he came into camp with a sore back. Now, I don't know, like, you know, again, what's the cause of the sore back? You know, what ultimately led to the shoulder inflammation? It seems like all the scans came back fine. It's just kind of one of those situations where you kind of put yourself in a bad situation, you know, to try to solve another bad situation. It's like, you know, when you hurt your ankle, sometimes you end up doing damage elsewhere because you're trying to compensate for how you're walking or running or whatever in any sport, right? So I'm hopeful that he gets the rest that he needs and that rest is consequential. You always worry about relievers because,
yep,
at their core, they are a volatile and combustible crop. That's just what they are. You know, is that there's a reason why these guys aren't starting, right? It's, you know, they're high effort, throwing as hard as they can, trying to do everything they can to, you know, put spin on their breaking pitches, and they're not meant, they're glass cannons, and sometimes those glass cannons, you know, sometimes their arms go out. All you really need to do to see that is to watch the ghost of Darren O'Day pitch these days when he's throwing 84-85, you know, with, you know, some off-speed stuff that's barely slower than that. It's just, you know, Father Time's undefeated, and even though guys like O'Day can last that long, a lot of these guys don't. And especially when you think about the workload that Matzek was under last year, you wonder, you know, if we'll ever see that version of Matzek again. You never know with relievers, but I'm hopeful that just because of all the scans coming back the way they did and everything seemed fine, that, you know, he's just giving him some rest and getting him back to working on his mechanics, that back to where they were, especially if his back's okay again, that he'll be okay, because it turns out this bullpen really could use him, because there's some pretty speculative pieces in there right now.
Yeah. we're going to come back to that as well, because this kind of blew by me even until we got a mailbag question that we'll answer at the end of the podcast. But the Braves have to make a decision at the end of this month on chopping their pitching staff down, because basically, long story short, there was the rule in place that they had to cut down to 13 pitchers, and they ended up pushing that back, but it's now pushed back to May 30th. So basically by the end of next weekend, they can only have 13 pitchers on the roster, and they've been carrying 14. So they have to kind of make a little bit of a tweak there, whether it's to go with Strider as a starter or something like that, but they're going to have to make a decision and without Matzik, and we'll get into all of what transpires there. Speaking though of kind of the sequence of events that happened when they put Matzik on the IL. So Monday's game, it was a long time ago now, but it was an offensive loss. Obviously it lost 1-0 to the Brewers. Had two hits and one walk with 16 strikeouts, about as ugly as it possibly could be there. I guess small caveat that Ronald Acuna was still out of the lineup, but still the rest of the lineup was not effective. No help at all for Ian Anderson in that game. But they used Strider out of the bullpen on Monday in a pretty bizarre, like, stated sequence by Snitker in the front office and whoever makes this decision. Basically, after the game, Snit came on and said that they were planning to start Strider on Tuesday until they had to put Matzik on the IL, which I don't really know about the logical consistency of that, because, you know, they knew before the game, they had some, I know they were maybe down an arm or whatever, but I still don't really understand the thought process there. Obviously they ended up calling out Tucker Davidson to start on Tuesday, which was fine. And by the way, he pitched pretty well, at least reasonably well. They got the win on Tuesday. But what did you make of all that? Because it just didn't sound like there was much of a plan. And when they were warming up Strider, we all kind of had this collective, like, you know, shaking of the head, basically, like, what is going on here? I thought at minimum they were going to use Strider along with an opener on Tuesday. But it seemed like they were going to actually start him, and then they didn't. And I still don't really know why, to be honest.
Here's what tells me about this decision, Brad. How many times have we been on this podcast? We're in a 1-0 game. We were railing against Snitker for using, like, Grant Dayton, who had been pitching back-to-back-to-back appearances in a close game because they were losing. And then on the time where they really need to say, you know what, let's keep Strider out of the mix. Maybe we do need to go to one of these lesser arms because our other guys are worn down. Maybe we need to use a Jesse Chavez or Jackson Stevens, who's been great, by the way, or, you know, Tyler Thornburg, who hasn't pitched in 2 weeks or whatever. We need to do that because we have to have Strider for bulk innings tomorrow. And the one time where that he goes, you know what, this game is close, I need to use our higher leverage arm, this was the day of all days that he decided to do it. It tilted me so incredibly badly. But look, it was clear that they just had a number of arms in their bullpen that, you know, either Snitker had decided, the coaching staff, the front office, I don't know who made that decision, but the idea was, we are not going to those guys on Monday. They just weren't going to do it, no matter what. And that they were just going to have only X guys available. Now, why that decision was made, that there's information that we just don't have. We just don't. We don't know how guys are feeling. Obviously, Matzik was hurt. And I understand that part, right? Like, you're not going to run Matzik out there. I don't think that the team was confused that Matzik wasn't feeling well, right?
Yeah.
I think this was not something they discovered on Monday morning. And, you know, if Matzik came in and said, hey, I'm feeling particularly sore today, I agree with that. But I think that this is something that wasn't just a snap decision that they made on Monday. I think that they're like, you know, hey, let's see how you're feeling tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. And then have a plan in place. Now, if your plan is to use Strider on Monday and to call up Tucker Davidson, and, like, you feel really good about the decision, I guess I can respect that. And it did work out that way, but we have no reason to believe that's what happened. None.
No, especially when, I mean, this is one of those nuances. It doesn't really matter that much, but he doesn't have to come out and say that they were going to start Strider on Tuesday after the game. Like, he could have just not acknowledged that at all. You know what I mean? Like, all he had to say was, we were always going to call out Tucker Davidson to start tomorrow. Like, why throw it out there that you're going to start Strider on Tuesday? Again, it's a small thing, but, like, it's just so weird.
or you can literally just say, look, Tucker's look good at
Gwinnett. It's fine.
We like the matchup against some of the lefties in the Brewers lineup, which, by the way, makes a certain amount of sense because Yelich and Tellez are still sitting there. But instead you're like, yeah, we were going to do it, but, you know, it is what it is.
It's just such a weird thing.
It tilted me.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. But I thought it was just a notable thing that was kind of strange. They get the win on Tuesday, as I mentioned before, behind Tucker, who was pretty decent. The night shift was lights out in that game, four shutout innings from the bullpen. Ronnie came back, which was, of course, a good thing, reached base three times. And then the big swing of the game was a Marcelo Ozuna home run, who had a great week. Actually, he was one of the only guys that did anything this week. I mean, I don't really have much to add. Did you see anything from Tucker that you thought was notable? Because clearly they have to make another decision about the rest of the fifth starter occupancy moving forward. Did he do enough to earn another start for you if you're making the decision?
I mean, maybe one other start, just especially if you keep using Strider the day before you would use him. I mean, that would make a certain amount of sense to keep him around for one more start, and maybe keep him around for one more start to, you know, just eat some innings before the rosters contract makes a certain amount of sense too. But I mean, no one else on this roster has earned that fifth rotation spot more than Spencer Strider has. You won't convince me. You can't convince me of that otherwise. No. He certainly has had times where he's, you know, looked a little rough, but I mean, there's also been some times where, like, you know, a lot of guys have looked like that the ball that they're holding is clearly not doing what they thought it was going to do. And that seems like because they're using a different ball every single day of the week. Right. So I'm not necessarily going to hold one-off relief appearances that don't go particularly well for him, when most of the time what he does is he throws two or three innings and he strikes out like six guys and completely dominates them. I really like what he could do in that starter role over a guy like Tucker. In Tucker's case, you know, like, his command is always iffy, particularly with his fastball. If he really commands that pitch well and he gets the run that he can get on it, then he can start missing some bats. But I mean, he only struck out three guys over five innings, and that's the kind of guy we've been seeing more often than not in Gwinnett. He'll strike out a few guys, but he's not really fooling all that many. He'll walk about as many as he strikes out, and he doesn't really get squared up a whole lot, but he has enough base runners on that he gives up runs. I liked what he did on Tuesday. You know, more power to him. I wouldn't be like outraged if he got another start with Atlanta, because, you know, having a lefty who can, you know, throw as hard as he can, like, that has real value to it. But he's not a guy that I'm going to put in the rotation and, you know, relegate Spencer Strider to the bullpen unless they have some real problems going on that bullpen. And they very well could, because, I mean, again, we're seeing guys like Jesse Chavez, Darren O'Day, and, you know, having to hope that those two guys hold up. And then Jackson Stevens, you know, has been a godsend for a bullpen that honestly was supposed to be a strength of this team and now looks kind of vulnerable.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe that's playing into why they're not starting Strider. Maybe that really is the reason they're not going to say that. You know, I've been saying it the last few podcasts, I would start him. I'm not in a blind rage either about him not starting. I think it's okay to give Tucker another chance. By the way, I'm not sure if it's announced, but it's certainly he's the probable starter for Monday. So I'm assuming he's going to pitch on Monday. That is Davidson. So we'll see what he looks like on Monday. But that's the plan right now. Strider is helpful bullpen, no question. But I will be looking long term and starting him eventually, and we'll get into that if we need to.
I want to talk to you a little bit about Ronald Acuña Jr. though. This guy had knee surgery, and he's running more than anyone in the league, and it's not even close. This is wild, right?
He's also. I mean, I know we're kind of just, I don't know, we're kind of just used to it. But Ronald Acuña didn't hit against major league pitching for, you know, almost a calendar year, and then he comes back and in 70 plate appearances has a 157 WRC plus, which is already really impressive. Like, he's walking at a ridiculous rate. The power is there. And then you throw in, like you just said, the stolen bases. I mean, he has eight stolen bases in 70 plate appearances.
I think he's on like a 96 stolen base over a 162 game series season average.
Just for comparison's sake, obviously he's run his entire career, but last year he stole, I almost said only, but only 17 stolen bases in 82 games. This year he has eight in 15 games. So he's on pace for like something in the 70s. I would imagine that's not going to actually happen. I would certainly take the under on anything approaching 60 even, but still, like, he is running like a crazy person. The hitting. And I mean, I feel like we can do the podcast every week on Ronald Acuña, but it is kind of absurd. I got a text this week from somebody that I think pays close attention. It was like, I think it's kind of under discussed how ridiculous it is for him to be out as long as he is. And then as soon as he comes back, I mean, he had like the, what, like a 2-game hiccup when he kind of looked like he was rusty. And then it was like, okay, now he's Ronald Acuña again. It's just kind of,
I'm pretty sure he stole bases in both those games.
He did. Yeah.
Like it's wild. And like, it's not just a stolen bases. It's like scoring from first on shallow flares to left field. You know, like, yeah, stuff that like normal healthy people can't do. And he's just now coming back and he's like, I've got this, guys. He's like, he's a one man offense. And like, it showed this week that the offense looks markedly different with what he does on the, because if he's at the top of the lineup, you have to respect him. And when he's on base, he causes havoc.
Oh yeah. He puts everybody else in place as well. You know, obviously we can praise him all day long, but it is night and day. Just in everything, you know, defense in the outfield when he's able to play out there too, he helps that. It's everything. He's an absolute generational monster, and we know that, but it's good to kind of recognize it every once in a while. Last thing before we get to a break, is Wednesday's very maddening loss. We'll come back to this later, but Austin Riley's had a really rough stretch for like 3 weeks now, but he had a pretty incredible plate appearance on Wednesday. He was in an 0-2 hole against Corbin Burns, who, by the way, is the reigning Cy Young winner, and ended that at bat in a 3-run home run to give the Braves a 4-0 lead early. Yeah, in it was this
on
game.
A full count. It ended up being on a full count, right?
Yeah, he was down 0-2 all the way back to a full count. Bombs off Corbin Burns, just a wild plate appearance. Also worth noting on a positive, Dansby was incredible in that game defensively. I think he made like 5 plays that were like ludicrous in one game. Just Obviously he's been that way all year long. I think even still today, he is leading all of baseball and like outs above average and all this. I mean, he's earning it too. Right now he'd be like probably the platinum glove winner at shortstop. That's how good he's been this year, but that was a wild one. I mean, you don't often see an individual showcase on defense like that. And he was just kind of everywhere on Wednesday. But I say all that.
He's been better at the plate too.
Oh yeah, he's back up to like a league average hitter, which if that's all he is with elite defense, you're talking about a fringe star kind of player. Obviously can't assume that, but he's playing like one right now. Clearly though, we're bearing the lead. The Braves blew the lead in this game 3 different times. Per Jason Stark, well renowned writer that he is, the Braves blew the lead in the 9th, 10th, and 11th innings. And they lost, of course, blowing the lead 3 times. That only happened one other time in the last 2 decades in Major League Baseball. So that's a pretty rare occurrence. There are a lot of baseball games, Eric. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. There's a lot of games every year.
Yeah, there's a lot of games happen, yeah.
So to lead entering the bottom of the 9th, 10th, and 11th and still lose is not something you see every day. It was the first blown slave of the season for Kenley Jansen. He's allowed one. I mean, it's not like a big deal.
And he's pitched a lot.
He was great before that. So I'm not really worried about that. And Chavez gets give up a walk-off in the 11th. It's going to happen sometimes. I'm not like – just the individual pieces of the loss are not, you know, you won't pull your hair out too much. But just the way it happened, the way it unfolded, they just kept taking control and kept giving it back. And even the original lead of 4-0 is one you just can't afford to blow very often. So that kind of left a sour taste in everyone's mouth going into the off day on Thursday. The weekend was better, which we'll get to. But did you have anything else to add about Wednesday's mania? It's Milwaukee.
I mean, other than the fact that I'm tired, I mean, I was doing my best to understand the keeping the ghost runner, zombie runner, whatever you want to call them, on second and extra innings. But I don't know what the Braves are just uniquely bad in extra innings. And it's only made that worse, giving the other team a runner in scoring position. Because like it seems like that it is automatic that runner scores against the Braves, and it seems almost automatic the Braves have no shot of moving them over other than the third base. And like it you know, for a Braves fan, that's frustrating. And at the end of the day, just the spare runner, I understand why it exists, and it's largely been true that we don't see those, you know, 16-17 inning games that like absolutely decimate bullpens. And I don't want to overstate that. Those long games, as cool as they are, you can talk about, wow, they had this like 16 inning slugfest. That ruins teams for like a week when those happen, because like all of a sudden you got like position players pitching and, you know, bullpen guys throwing extra innings and stuff like that. You know, guys who are used to going 1, they go 2, and like that can really mess up teams. I don't want to, like, that's a real thing, but the Manfred ball feels bad. It just does. And
do you have a guess while we're here on the Braves record in extra innings the last two seasons?
I was like 2-14.
It is better than that. They are 0-3 this year, and they were 5-9 last year. So they're 5-12.
I was not far off.
But in 5-12, I mean, again, this is a team. Granted, as much as we've pointed this out a lot, the Braves were not as good last year in the regular season as people remember them being. They just weren't that good in the regular season. But still, that was a winning baseball team, and they went 5-9 last year at extra innings. And this year, they're 0-3. So, like, they have, if nothing else, they have underperformed their true talent level in those situations for two seasons. And it's not a huge sample, but those games can be maddening. They stick in your head because they're obviously close, memorable games. And basically, they were the worst team last year in extra innings of any good team. The only other team that was in their category was the Dodgers, actually. They were actually quite bad extra innings last year, which is hilarious. But that's, you know, weird. Yeah. But I mean, the Brewers were 10-8. The Cardinals were 7-2. The Giants were 9-9, which is kind of what you expect. But yeah, the Braves just cannot seem to win extra inning games for whatever reason. And that hurts when you are not winning other games like they are not this season so far. So a maddening end to that. And, like, you know, overall, to lose that game on Wednesday in extras, leading three times, and also to lose on Monday against the Brewers when you give up one run, like, that combination in the series is enough to have you pull your hair out. But it happened. Okay, Eric, we'll get into the weekend series against the Marlins momentarily, and also look ahead to some player observations that are more big picture, some Bo Contreras talk later in the podcast that I'm sure you're excited about, and yes. And of course, much more than that. But first, a word from our sponsors on the podcast.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's klaviyo.com/box.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Eric, quickly, the Marlins series was better for the Braves. In fact, it was their first road series victory of the season, which they clinched by winning on Friday and Saturday. A couple of pretty decent pitching performances from Charlie Morton and Kyle Wright. No surprises there. And then home runs were the story of the two wins on Friday. They hit three home runs that basically was all the scoring almost. Ozuna, by the way, had a stretch of four homers in six games, which he definitely needed. And then Saturday was the Bo Contreras game. Bo Contreras hits two home runs. At that point, he had six home runs in his first 37 plate appearances of the season, and he was slugging .813 for the campaign. I believe even as of today, but certainly as of yesterday, he was tied for the major league lead for home runs by a catcher, which is hilarious because he's only played like, what, not even 10 games, 12 games, something like that.
Yeah, it's
he's still slugging .788 for the season. Of course, that produced hot takes, that produced all kinds of, like, he has to DH every single day and all this talk. But before we get to that, let's just take a second. Bo Contreras, having fun, I guess.
Yeah, and the Braves are going to have some interesting decisions to make once Manny Pena comes back. I guess he's out for the season now, right?
He's out surgery. For the season. We talked about this a little bit last week. Me and Scott last week, I talked about this. Actually, even for next year, it's a pretty interesting thing because he's under contract, and so is TDA. So, like, they're all under contract for next year, and I have to imagine that one of them is not going to be empty a year from now. We'll see.
That seems correct, and, you know, obviously, I kind of do wish that they could fit Contreras into the lineup a little bit more. I've been on record as saying that, you know, I don't believe that there's any world that when there's only two catchers on the roster.
I mean, he did do it, as we discussed. He did do it a couple times. Snicker did it a couple times. He did it.
I remain skeptical that holds, man. Like, his track record is so
bad. I'm with you. I'm with you on this 100%. I just want to say,
so many people tweeted at me too. They're like,
we just talked about it. It was very funny. But no, to your point, it's so funny now to hear the people. There's always the people that say you can't do it, and that's the side the sticker's on. And it's
those are the same people that are tweeting right now.
Yes, and part of that is just like the what happens if Darno gets hurt? And it's like, well, in that extremely unlikely event, you have one game that you lose the DH, one game where you have to put Contreras at catcher, and then you have to pinch hit a couple times. That's all that happens in that game. That is the only downside. It's one game. You have to do that to replace him. That's not real downside. And by the way, Snicker literally did it this year. So if there was that much risk, if you were just so terrified of it, he did it multiple times, like this month.
and by the way, in that worst case scenario, the guy that's pinch hitting is the guy that you would want in the lineup, likely, if they were refusing to put the backup catcher in the lineup to begin with.
I mean,
you're gonna get your Orlando Arcia pinch hit at bat.
Here's the thing. Okay, so there is an argument for me. There's a pretty easy argument. If you don't want to have Contreras and or Darno DHing on a regular basis, the easy argument against it is that Ozuna has to play the field when you do that. That is, for me, the argument against it. There is no offensive argument against it in my mind. It's that you have to worry about Ozuna playing the field, as we'll get to in a second. Travis DeMeritt, the Cinderella slipper, has come off after his red hot start. I believe he is now 28 plate appearances in a row without reaching base or getting a hit or something like that. He is now crashed to earth in a big way. And that covered it up a little bit, and I get that. But the problem is, if you DH one of those guys, that leaves Mr. Ozuna in left field, and you don't want that. You don't want that happening.
Yeah, so, and you do have to kind of have Ozuna in the lineup right now because he's actually figured out
how he's to actually hitting. And obviously, when Ronnie comes back and is playing outfield exclusively or close to it, it's nice to have him there and not have to worry about him DHing. But right now, he's also DHing sometimes and all that stuff as well. So I get it. And for me, I certainly think there is room for either Darno or Contreras DHing on a fairly regular basis, but it can't, for me, it's not an everyday thing. There's right now, there's the two sides, and it's like every day or not at all. I am in the middle, predictably, on that. I think there are certain scenarios where you have to kind of just grin and bear it and put Ozuna in left and just deal with it. But also, you don't want Ozuna playing left field every day. You just don't. He's terrible. We all know this, but he's truly terrible out there. So yeah, like,
he cost the Braves a runner today for sure.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, I get it, but for me, if you just have any, I mean, also, it would really help if they had another outfielder, clearly. I know DeMeritt did the job very well for about 2 weeks, and now he's just come back to earth. But if they had Rosario, if they had another guy they could put out there, it'd be a lot easier. So maybe that's part of the issue now, too. But it is a nuanced conversation. But one thing that I think we agree on, Eric, is that it does not hold water for us to say we can't do it because they because of the risk. The risk is not real. It's not a real thing in my mind. So.
Yeah, it does come down to a bit of a defensive, like, the Braves have some weird lineup constraints right now, especially in situations where they have to DH Ronnie, because that's
when it becomes awful. If you have to DH Ronnie, you have to play. First of all, you can't play both catchers. You have to play Ozuna in a corner, and then you have to play DeMeritt or Heredia or, God forbid, Arcia, whatever you want to do there. But no matter what, you're playing a big negative in some form in one of your corner outfield spots. You have a bad defender in the other corner outfield spot. And then you're also having probably Contreras on your bench. So it's like, it's a weird situation. This is not, and you know, when Rosario comes back, the hope would be he could hit again, but his defense is not going to be good, you would imagine. So there are some questions in the outfield, let's just say. But All that said, I am excited about Bill Contreras. I know you watched him a ton as a minor leaguer. Obviously, he's going to cool off from this, but I think he's always had the rep of a guy who's going to hit at the big league level. Are you surprised by any of this? Not necessarily just the volume of it, but is he, you know, a guy that we can bank on? I mean, there's this, I can't remember who said it now, a national person was like, well, you know, even if you don't believe in his hit tool, the power is so much where like he might become Mike Zunino and be like a 35 home run guy that hits, you know, 220. And that's a really good player catcher, like regardless.
I think that Contreras has raw power. Zunino's a lofty conspiracy because, and he's kind of an extreme example.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's like a very 200, extreme example. Yes.
But he's like 200, but when he hits one, it goes 450 feet. I mean, like yes. Contreras is a better hitter than he is. And the two home runs that he hit on Saturday are actually the best example because both of those were opposite field, just over the wall. He wasn't like up there hacking, taking the hit in tanks, right? But no. He's very, very strong. But I will say the one thing about Contreras, right? What's the one thing last year that everyone complained about Contreras and that he like he was a bust and that he won't be this catcher of the future? What was the reason? It was defense, right?
Of course.
What have you heard one thing since he's been up about his defensive ability or his pitch call or his game calling since he's been up?
Well, Eric, you know the secret here is that if a guy hits, no one cares.
Well, he's still been good. He's been good behind the
plate. I'm saying it's a combination of those two things. Like, I'm not going to tell you I have a full grasp on Contreras' defense after, 10 games this year. But I will tell you this. Unless it's, like, comically, visually awful for a regular fan, if he hits, no one cares. I promise you that.
Well, I will say this. There were games where Contreras hit home runs in last year, and they were still talking about how very prominent beat writers.
If you have obvious things like pass balls, that's the one thing really that gets you. Like, what you remember this very well. When Tyler Flowers lost the fan base, is because he had all the pass balls. That's the stuff that fans actually notice. Framing, most fans don't notice that. Even like, you know, throwing out runners, people knew that Darno was bad at it until this year, but like it wasn't until he
found the fountain of youth or something.
But it wasn't like an everyday talking point. We kind of knew about it. People that were diehards knew, but it really, other than pass balls, that's really the thing that gets you noticed in terms of your catcher defense to most people. And as long as he's catching the ball, like I don't think anybody's going to care if he hits. It's just one of those things. Like, I don't know. You know him well better than I do about his defense. I never panicked about it. You know, obviously we'd always hear that he was not the better of the catching prospects among the defensive guys, but of course
Shea is not here anymore anyway.
So no, I'm just saying, put yourself in the, I know Eric, you're an expert on prospects. I'm trying to take the position of casual minor league observer. And I think the scouting report, broadly speaking for casual people, was Langoliers is a defensive guy. And Contreras is the offensive guy. And that's kind of what sticks to you in terms of what you're expected of. And that, you know, may still be sticking, but if you look at the numbers and what you just brought up, no one seems to care this year. So maybe it's a small sample size. Maybe he's just better. Did you ever have concerns about him being just terrible behind the plate? I'm asking you as a prospect person.
Early on, no. The issue that happened was everyone got converted to the one knee in the dirt catching. And that's not an easy transition. I mean, Shea didn't even look particularly great when he was first starting to make that transition, right? Like, it's a hard thing to do to, like, by the way, you know that catching stance if you used your entire career? Yeah, we need to change into something else now.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, that stance is significantly harder to block balls, right? Like, it's objectively, it is just harder. It's much better for framing, but it's objectively harder to block balls, prevent pass balls, especially if you're not familiar with it. And by the way, Travis Darno's hurt, so we need you to do it in the major leagues now. That's what happened to William Contreras, and that's what everyone lost their minds about last year. And now he's just gotten more practice at it. He's worked hard at it. And I'm not saying he's not going to be like, you know, Pudge Rodriguez back there or anything like that, but, you know, that's not fair. And Shea Langeliers is still the better defensive catching prospect, but that's because he's objectively a really good, like, one of the better defensive catching prospects we've seen in a long time. But he almost put up a defensive highlight at catcher when he almost picked off a guy at first, except for the fact that Matt Olson forgot how to catch a baseball. you know, the other day. He's able to control a running game. He does well. So, like, again, I it's just something to kind of point out the fact that a lot of the people who are like, you know, like, well, Contreras can't be back there. He might be able to hit a little bit, but he's, you know, he's a terrible catcher, blah, blah, blah. I don't hear about those people anymore.
No,
he'll have his hiccups because every catcher does. At the end of the day, they're trying to catch a ball that's spinning 2,800 RPMs and going 98 miles an hour. Sometimes things go awry when you're doing that over and over again. But at the same time, I think he's a good catcher. And if he's going to keep hitting home runs like this, I don't really care what position he plays.
Yep. I think we're on the same page. I think that, you know, he is certainly at the moment, both Darno and Contreras are two of their best nine hitters. And the problem comes down to versatility with Ozuna, and we don't care about them playing together. They should play together if they need to play together, and that's not a concern for us at all. So we'll leave it there.
Your boy Morton's looking a little bit better lately.
Charlie is showing some signs. We like to see it from Mr. Morton, the only player that is older than I am. That's not true. So is Chavez. Jesse Chavez and Darren O'Day are also older than I am as well. But yeah. Not to go down the rabbit hole again with Morton, but I think he, number one, right, bounced back in good fashion after his one hiccup start. But yeah, last three starts for Morton, he was just okay in his start on Friday, but his last three starts, 2.2 ERA, 19 Ks in 16 innings. Love to see that.
Missing bats. And to be fair, he made one mistake to Jorge Soler. And that's that guy is going to put a ball in orbit if you make a mistake to him. That's just what's going
to
happen.
He does that sometimes. Yes. No, that was good to see. Other than that, I mean, we talk about today's game if we want to, but it was a 4-3. Of course, the 4-3 loss, they had a chance to sweep. They were not able to do so. I had a little bit of a hiccup with how long they left Ian in the game. I don't know why he started the seventh inning today. Maybe that's a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking. I'll own that, but I didn't love that. They did threaten to come back. They scored two runs in the ninth, but it was too little too late was way you would say that. I just was confused a little bit why they went back to Ian in the seventh. I'm not sure that was like the reason why they lost the game. I don't think you can necessarily do the, well, they scored two runs in the ninth inning thing. That's a little bit too convenient for me, but it certainly would have been nice if they were down by down one or down two instead of down three.
Yeah, I think that just comes back to some of the bullpen management issues they've been having. It's just like they're just trying to limit the usage of those guys when you have, you know, two games back to back where you had to use some high leverage guys
and no off day tomorrow.
And it's a getaway day. So like it's a little bit dicey. I understand it a little bit. And it's funny because Ivan has been very adamant about the Braves' issues with leaving like starters in to face orders the third time this year for the Braves. And he's not wrong. That is not good. Like statistically, that's not good. I've argued with Ivan that of all the guys who are generally better later in games, it is Ian. It's just that Ian can't pitch in the first inning for some reason. It's a bizarre thing too. Like it's just like, you know, every first inning, like he gives up a run or two and then he just kind of settles in and ends up being fine. And he was perfectly, he was not the reason the Braves lost this game. You know what I mean? One run scored because Marcelo Zuna's in left field, and if any other left fielder was out there, they could not have run on him. And in another one, Travis Demeritt lost track of the outs over there in right field and just let a guy tag up and score. That was just sloppy. That's just all it was. It was sloppy and a guy with a noodle for an arm. That's why they lost.
The noodle.
Yeah, it's really bad. I tried so hard. Like, look, he's really not that bad. And then some of the throws he's made.
He can't throw. He just can't.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can throw more behind him.
It's not good. Speaking about the bullpen real quick, we got a question that I thought was interesting from Neil, which I sort of referred to earlier, but his question was, he wanted to hear our takes on the podcast about the bullpen because of the fact that they have to trim someone on the pitching staff in the next week or so to go back from 14 down to 13. And obviously there could be some injuries, could be other things. He said Thornburg to him as a candidate, maybe O'Day and Chavez. Also, you know, I think Jackson Stevens is definitely safe. He's been awesome. So I think he's not going anywhere. But I think probably if they had to just choose a reliever to go away from, it would either be Thornburg, O'Day, or Chavez. The other option would be to just make Strider a starter and then take away Davidson. And now you're down to 13. Do you have thoughts on this? I think what we would probably do collectively is just go to Strider. But if they had to get rid of a reliever, who would you choose to part ways with if they had to?
I mean, the move I would make is Strider to the rotation. I'll just go ahead and get that out of the way. But I'm not a fan of either of any of those three relievers. I understand what the position the Braves are in. I would probably, there's been so many case times where running the if you looked at the stat line of Tyler Thornburg, that it would make a ton of sense to put him in a position, put him in a situation to throw, and they didn't, right? And yeah. I'm like, what be like, he's thrown a little bit, but he's not a guy they go to very often. It makes me wonder a little bit about how much trust they have.
They kind of use him as the last guy, at least they have this year for the most part. Like, I mean, maybe you could say Strider in certain spots where he's pitched in low leverage situations, but recently he's been more high leverage. And Thornburg, his numbers are okay, but I'm with you. He's kind of been mop-up-ish at times this year, which is interesting to know for sure.
Yeah. Like, I'll say this of in pure stuff, Darren O'Day is the guy that I would be getting rid of because
Watch your mouth, sir.
He is maxing out at 85, man.
He's like, 39 years old, Eric.
They're running him up there against Jorge Soler. What do you think's going to happen?
Now, like, I will say, in Darren O'Day's defense, this is a small sample size. Do you know what Darren O'Day's expected ERA is this year?
I do not.
It is 2.54, sir. I'm just saying.
I'm glad that computer doesn't have eyes because that's not what
I'm just playing devil's advocate for the most part. He does not look great. He does, but to be fair to him, even when he was good, he didn't always look great. So it was like those, he's a bit of an oddball. He's always been great against righties. I'll say that. Now against lefties, he's not going to do much for you, but he is a specialist and that's not what you want in the current landscape of the three batter minimum and all that stuff. So maybe that's part of it.
I think that's part of it. And having a guy who's, you know, I hate the whole veteran thing, but like a guy who can, like, you know, give advice to like the ever revolving door of relievers that are inevitably going to be in there. That has some value, and the Braves clearly do like having him around because they brought him back a couple times now. If I'm getting rid of a guy, I'm getting rid of the guy that I don't trust and I'm not putting out there very often. So it's probably gonna be Thornburg.
I think if I had to guess who they move on from, if it is not just sending Tucker back to the minors, if they actually, you know, kind of move on from someone, it's probably Thornburg. Maybe if Chavez or O'Day have another blow up this week, they're maybe more on the chopping block, but those guys are vets and Snicker likes vets, and Chavez is their opener. If they seem to use an opener, it's always seems to be Chavez. I'm just saying it has been multiple times last year, this year.
I'm not saying that hasn't been happening. I'm just sighing about what should be happening, and that ain't it for me.
I understand. Okay, hopefully that answers the question. We would both just kind of start Strider and move on from there. Before we get out of here, just some player observations as we're again at the quarter mark of the season. I mentioned before, but Austin Riley is in a deep funk right now. His numbers still look okay for the season. But his numbers are way down, a 224, 309, 436 slash. Obviously, the power still looks pretty good there. But his OPS is like 450 in the last like 3 weeks. He's been pretty bad. Outside of the home run that I mentioned before against Burns, which was an awesome at bat, he's been pretty bad. And then also, Adam Duvall, our beloved Adam Duvall, he is carrying the defense in the outfield, but he is not hitting at all. He has a 58 WRC plus for the season. He is slugging 291. Like, the thing with Adam Duvall is, we all know this, but in case people don't know this, Adam Duvall is never going to be a high average guy, but he usually supplements that with 30 homer power, and that is not happening right now. The power is not manifesting for Duvall. And lastly, in this trio of ugliness recently, Travis DeMeritt, as I said before, is hitless in his last 28 at-bats, and he's down to a 73 WRC plus for the season. And I kid you not, 2 weeks ago, it was like 150. Like, that's how bad he's been for the last 2 weeks or so. Granted, it was a small sample size, but if you thought DeMeritt was suddenly going to be a standout hitter, that's sort of been derailed. So I say all of that to preface what I said at the very beginning of this podcast. Essentially, two guys this year have been good compared to their normal baselines, and they're Ronald Acuna and Travis d'Arnaud. Obviously, you could throw in Bill Contreras. You could throw in Orlando Arcia on smaller scales. For themselves, but the full timers, even guys like Riley and Olson, who have been above average hitters this year have been below their normal averages. Guys like Ozzie Albies has been below his normal average this year, despite being a definitely an acceptably solid player because the defense and all that. Dansby's been fine as a hitter, but most of his value has been defense this year, et cetera, et cetera. Before I give you the team numbers, Eric, does this track with your eyes? Because it feels to me like this is definitely the case and the numbers are painting a pretty ugly picture almost across the board right now.
Well, yeah, and I think that anyone that thought that Travis DeMeritt was just going to be like the savior in the outfield, just it's kind of like the Charlie Brown with the football thing.
Well,
right?
Listen, those 2 weeks really helped. I will say that. Those two weeks of production
helped. It was remarkable that they got what they got out of him.
Yes.
And, you know, but this is kind of just who he is. He's a guy, he's always struck out a lot. He's always disappeared for large stretches of the season. When he's good, he's good. And he's made some really good defensive plays. Now, he cost the Braves a run defensively today, but that was, you know, mental lapses happen. It's whatever. And I don't think that all these things are they're not equal, right? Like, I don't think that DeMeritt, he just was never particularly good. They just got a chunk out of him, and then he was just going to never be a long-term solution. In Austin Riley's case, I actually think he will be fine. Because he's just a guy that when he does go in funks, he often makes adjustments and then he figures it out. More importantly, he just had a kid and, you know, lost his arbitration hearing, which I think is a bit of an overblown thing. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of personal turmoil with the guy right now, and he's probably not sleeping a whole lot. So I'm not like going to kill him for, you know, not being particularly great. And then Adam Duvall, he has looked absolutely lost. Like, I've almost wondered if he has vision issues.
Well, and the only thing is with Duvall is like, number one, he has always been streaky. So, and they know that, and they are probably waiting for him to get hot. But, you know, last year he hit 38 home runs last season, Eric. 38 home runs.
Yep.
This season he has two home runs in a quarter of a season. Like two.
Yep. Yep. You know, and
Matt Olson's not there.
It's one thing that you mentioned about Matt Olson, and it's kind of a weird thing. I actually looked up his splits for the month of May for his career, and like, this is just who he is in May.
Oh really? I did not know that.
He historically he's hit more home runs, but like the month's not done yet, so it's kind of hard to compare that. But like, he hits like 200 every May.
That's interesting. No, I mean listen, Matt Olson,
he's been okay. Like, he's still going.
Yeah, I was gonna say, as much as he's gonna, I mean, I know there are the Freeman zealots that are piling on Matt Olson. Like, his numbers look totally fine. Like, he's not been bad. He's just been bad for him. Like, his OPS is like 790 or something.
He also
he's
had
been
like,
fine, but
he also had those three games recently where he forgot how to catch a ball.
We talked about it last week with Scott. Like, Scott and I were just like, throw your hands up in there, because Matt Olson is a good defensive player. Like, I don't really worry about that. I don't really care about him having one bad week. It was bad, make no mistake, but I don't really worry about that too much. So, yeah, I mean, long story short, I don't think the offense is broken. It'd be nice if some of these guys hit. I think I'm with you on Riley, where he'll find it again. As much as I know I've painted as being super anti-Riley, I still think he's better than this. And I think I've long said for this year, my projection was he's going to be a top 10 third baseman rather than a top 3 third baseman. And I still stand by that. But by the way, he's better than this no matter what. So that's going to happen. Duvall, they have to keep playing him, unfortunately. Like, that's one of the things about Duvall this year, is that they have nobody else to go to. Like, his defense is so much better than what else they have. I mean, they could play Heredia, but Duvall's still better than Heredia at the plate.
Or they could call it Michael Harris, Brad.
Oh, Lord.
Don't say that,
Eric. People are going to think you're serious about that. You can't say that.
Please don't do that. Everybody, do not. It is okay. Give Michael Harris time. I understand that it's frustrating. He is very good. But
I have to do it just out of necessity. Do you happen to know Christian Pache's WRC plus for the season in Oakland?
It's I don't think it's very good, Brad.
It is 26.
Yeah, it's not good.
I'm still rooting for Christian to hit, but it may never happen. I'm just saying. I don't know why that thought sparked in my head, but I was looking that up today because somebody's talking about Pache on my timeline, and I went and looked it up, and it was not good. Okay. So overall, this is pretty crazy. As of earlier today when I pulled this, it might have been updated since then, but this is pretty close. The Braves were tied for 10th in the National League, not in the majors, 10th in the National League, as in like below average, with a 95 WRC plus. This is an offense that was supposed to be top 2 or 3 in the league this year. They are 10th in the National League in overall weighted runs created plus. They are number 2 in home runs, but they are sub 300 on base as a team. this year.
That is not good.
No, it's not. So part of that, I think, will be explained or fixed by guys just being better. I think Ozzie will be better than this. I think Olsen will be better than this. I think Riley will be better than this. Duvall, I think, is not this bad. I don't think that's even on the table. But also, they do have some fundamental questions as well. That third outfielder spot is a rotating door at the moment, depending on what Ronnie's availability is by defense, slash Ozuna DHing. I don't know if Darnold is going to do this all year long. He's been good. But I don't know. It's an offense that I still think is good, but we are now a quarter of the way through the season, and it has decidedly not been good. What is your confidence level about the offense as a whole at this point?
I don't think that we're in a position now to say that they're going to be like a top two or three offense in the league. I honestly was with you. I thought that this was going to be one of the better. The offense was the thing I was worried the least about.
Agreed.
And it's been the thing that has been the worst. The starting pitching, you know, we've seen a little bit of unevenness, but I mean, like, you can't really be upset with what Kyle Wright's done. You can't be upset with Max Fried. Charlie Morton's turned it around. Like, the rotation's been good. The bullpen's hurt, but they've still performed well, largely.
It has still been totally fine for the season, like, overall. Just for the record, the Braves at this moment are number two in Fangraphs WAR among pitching staffs in the National League, behind only the Brewers.
That's the full pitching staff. $1 million betting on that happening.
So, but, yeah, number two in the league. And I believe the relievers are number one in the league. How about that?
And that's with Luke Jackson and Tyler Matzek being hurt.
So they're number one in Fangraphs WAR. They're like number three in ERA. They are number one in strikeout rate. This is the bullpen.
Who leads the team in reliever WAR?
Oh God, I have to look it up now.
If it's on Fangraphs, you can just click on the team name and it'll give it to you.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's right there. It's a tie between Mr. Minter and Mr. Jansen.
How far is Strider down?
He is third.
Okay.
So tie okay. So behind Olwey, Minter, and Jansen. So and his it's kind of crazy. Okay, this is why the bullpen's been so good. Basically, they have had six guys that have been extremely good in the bullpen so far, if you count Strider. Minter, as discussed multiple times, has been awesome this year. Jansen has been awesome this year. Strider's been awesome this year. Jesse Chavez, coming into today, had a 1.04 ERA.
Sure.
Sure. At least on this, with the Braves. So, and then Colin McHugh has great peripherals, which is part of this. His ERA is like four, but his peripherals are incredible. So all that's Jackson Stevens as well has obviously been great this year. So yeah, the bullpen, even with Will Smith kind of not pitching very well, and Matic and even some Sean Newcomb sprinkled in there from early in the season, has been awesome. So yeah, to your point, we would have lost money on the offense being the worst part of the team through a quarter of the season, and that has been
they very clearly have been.
Well, yes, I think I would say defense has been the worst part of the team, and then you would say but certainly the position.
Players. That's fair.
Position players are probably the answer. But even then, the defense, because of Dansby, looks okay in some of these metrics on the whole. It doesn't look good, but it's like middle of the pack in defense because basically only because of Dansby and Ozzie, essentially. Everybody else is
better. Don't look at those corner outfield spots.
Corner outfield's not been good. By the way, Austin Riley's defensive numbers are hideous. Yeah,
really, but really bad.
Yeah, Cornell Field and Riley and even Olsen has not been good, obviously, either. So anyway, long story short, they got to hit better. We kind of all know this, but for me, there is reason to believe, but I kind of what you said just sticks out to me in that you're banking on them not being a top three team. I think when you dig this kind of hole, that does kind of mean it's a lot harder to be that for the full season. It would not stun me if they were a top three offense from this point forward, but a quarter of the season still counts on your resume. And that means you got a lot of work to do. Look, the Dodgers, unsurprisingly, are number one in almost every category on offense. They're awesome. They're loaded. That's not going to change. Do the Braves have a better offense than the Mets? I kind of think they do. They haven't this year so far by any stretch of the imagination, but I kind of think I'd take the Braves even now, long-term. Marlins have better numbers than the Braves do offensively. I definitely buy the Braves offense over the Marlins for the season. I don't know, the Phillies are powerful, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going Bryce
Harper's health depends is a very important
He's DH only now because of the elbow, so that's a little bit of a weird thing. Anyway, long story. I just think they got to hit better. We all know this. I think if you look at the projections before we get out of here, they're not super kind to the Braves now. And I get it. Like, look, if you bank one fourth of the season and you're a sub 500 team, your projections, in fact, they're still kind of treating them like a decent bet to make the playoffs, like 55-60%. That sounds right to me, if only because the Mets are not trustworthy, but they are definitely in worse position now, which I think we've said that like four podcasts in a row, but it's truly the case. Now on the bright side, and you'll know this, Eric, because you're a diehard like everyone else that listens to the podcast. The schedule is pretty favorable now for a while. That begins this week. They play Philly and Miami at home this week for 7 games. Then they go to Arizona, bad team. They go to Colorado, bad team. They go to they are home for Oakland, bad team. Home for Pittsburgh, bad team. At Washington, not very good. At the Cubs, and then that takes you all the way to like mid to late June. So basically the next 4 weeks, they don't play a good team for 4 weeks. That is a good time to get your schedule right, because after that, they have some more challenges. They play the Giants and Dodgers in a 7-game stretch. So until then, the schedule is very favorable for you. Of course, this is baseball. Anything can happen, but it would be very, very advisable for the Braves to go out and go something like 18-10, their next 28 games, something like that.
Yeah, if they're not over 500 after that stretch against a bunch of below 500 teams, and a lot of them are actively bad.
Actively bad.
I mean, I have to just panic is a kind of a weird word to use, but you have very real reason to be concerned that the Braves coming off a World Series title wouldn't make the playoffs. I'll say that much. Because if you can't beat the bad teams.
No, that's, you're right.
It doesn't help.
The best team they play in the next month is the Phillies. And the Phillies are not any great shakes. But that's the best team on paper that they play in the next month. And that's this series that begins on Monday. And it's at home. It's 4 games in your own park. Like, that'd be a good time. Like, don't go out and lose a series at home to the Phillies. Because from there, I mean, you could argue the Marlins are as good as the Phillies if you want to. That's fine with me if you want to argue that, or if you want to argue on behalf of somebody else. But like, objectively, we know Arizona, Colorado, Oakland, Pittsburgh, and that's 4 series in a row. Those are all like capital B bad teams. You got to win some games in that stretch.
Yeah, there are some really bad ones in there. You can't lose 2 out of 3 to the Pirates.
The Pirates have a negative 88 run differential in 40 games. That is incredibly bad. I can't express to you how bad that is. They were losing by more than 2 runs per game. That is impossibly bad. It just occurred to me now, like, man, that's terrible.
The no hitter loss is still,
The Pirates have allowed 221 runs in 40 games. Oh man. Okay. Anyway, that's a rabbit hole we can avoid for now. But four weeks, almost exactly a month from today, they do not play a good team again until they play the Giants on June 20th. So, win some games.
Yep, get it together. Yeah,
get it together. Win some baseball games. Anything else you have to add, Eric, on the podcast before we get out of here? Because we've gone long, as we always do.
No, nothing in particular. You know, we're trying to figure out exactly how we're going to be doing our draft coverage. I keep forgetting that the draft date keeps has moved. It's in the middle of July, but we're going to be cranking that up soon. Apologies in advance. There will not be a road to Atlanta this week. It's the end of the year, and I have school year, and I have kids, and my wife's a teacher. It's just kind of, I was trying to figure out the schedule wise. It's just not going to happen. So I apologize to listeners, but I promise we'll get caught back up the week after. So unfortunately, no road to Atlanta this week, but beyond that, that's pretty much all I've got. Just make sure you come to the site.
Yeah. Also, programming note on the show, in addition to what I'm about to say, you should be subscribing to this podcast and this podcast network on the whole, which includes Road Atlanta, as Eric just talked about. That's the minor league focused show. We have the Daily Hammer, hosted primarily by Sean Coleman, who's doing a great job. Like 5 times a week, Sean is just carrying the massive load for us, breaking down the games as they happen and the news and all that stuff. Thanks to Sean. And also, we have a YouTube show with Grant and Corey. They do a great job on the YouTube side of things. I say all that programming note, I am out of pocket next weekend. So we're going to have a show, it looks like, somewhere along the way with Eric or Scott or both or something, some combination. But keep that in mind. I will not be on the show a week from now. I have to travel with my brother for his pre-wedding festivities. So I'll be out of pocket. Eric knows this. Yeah. I'm not asking the podcast right now. But it will not be me that you hear next on the next show, most likely on the next flagship podcast. But regardless, the best way to find the podcast always to subscribe, because that way you get all of it in one place, automatically delivered to you. Battery Power Podcast, Road to Atlanta Podcast, Daily Hammer, anything special episode wise the SB Nation wants to deliver to you, all of that is there. And definitely want to encourage you to do that. Also leave 5-star reviews and ratings, all that fun stuff. Follow Eric on Twitter. Eric, is your Twitter handle unchanged? I believe it is.
It is unchanged at Leprechaun with a K. And who knows, maybe next weekend Scott and I will make the horrible decision again to actually like record a podcast while a game's
during the game. Yeah, please.
That was so good.
You always know when I am not here, when the inmates start running the asylum on a Sunday and they just start recording like the seventh inning of the baseball game, just losing their minds.
Scott Coleman, main host, top of the sixth. Here we go.
By the way, that's supposed to be a good game. Sunday, which I assume will be the day you guys probably record, is scheduled to be Max Fried against Pablo Lopez. And that's a good matchup. And it's a 135 game in Atlanta. A lot of eyeballs in that one, I would imagine. So that'd be fun. Anyway.
There you go.
Subscribe to the podcast. Please go ahead and do that.
Yeah, we'll just do a three-hour episode. Just do the whole
thing. Just do a live show of the game. Just don't get us banned or arrested by like playing live audio. Don't do that. You could live talk about the game. That's fine.
No, we're not. There's a lot of reasons why the broadcast isn't going to be featured. The broadcast audio is not going to be featured.
And that's enough of this podcast for today. Eric, thank you for listening, everybody. Eric, thank you for being here on the show. One more time, follow the site, follow us if you'd like to, subscribe to the podcast. See you next time.